Milchem and Kolel, Shigib Magash and Hepna on Tehillim chapter your base, last Pasuk Tes, Shigivim on Sunday, 22nd of Kislev, Tavshin Tanaches, 2nd of December 2007. Let's get to the last Pasuk Tes. Soviv Rishoyim Yis Halochim, all around the Rishoyim walk, Kurum, as one who is lofty or on high, Zuz, despised, Livnei Odom to mankind. The Rum Zuz, Livnei Odom, man, so someone which is high is Rum, like the word Rom, which means on high. Zulus means despised, like the word Zol, which means cheap. Or Mizalzel, which is to insult. Yeah? Livnei Odom to man. What on earth does it mean? It's a big problem. We'll see how we go. Sovi Rishon Yisalochem, I'll take the translation which I think I got from the Lubavitch translation of Tanakh. They have a fantastic website. Lubavitch got a fantastic website which translates Tanakh with the Rashi translation. And many of these Rashis I find very hard, and I'm helped out by the translation of Mr. Lubavitch website. It's a very, very useful website. And I'll take the translation from there. Sovi Rishon Yisalochem, Rishonim walk on all sides, or walk all around. Karum Zulus, when the one who appears to be lowly, Zulus is lowly, is really lofty, or exalted, or elevated, living in the Odom, and it appears like that to people. Very, very hard pasuk. Probably one of the hardest ones we've learned, yeah? Until you learn the Mefarshim, it's a complete mystery. So, let's start. Well, we'll see. We'll see. It'll come out with many different meanings, of course, as you'd expect from the Mefarshim. The first thing is, let's learn how Rashi learns it. Rashi says that we're talking about Rishoyim who surround Tzadikim in order to trap them. Rishoyim who are out to get at the tzaddik, and they plant also and hide all sorts of traps and problems for the tzaddikim in order to get hold of to trap the tzaddik. And that's not Rishoyim Talachon. The Rishoyim surround the tzaddik, and that's how Rashi learns the pshat in the first part of the pasuk. They surround the tzaddik. The Rishoyim surround the tzaddik in order to entrap the tzaddik. Then Rashi says, this idea of Karum Zulus Livnei Odom is David HaMelech talking about himself. And he says that he is the Zulus. He is the lowly, despised person. Why? In what way is David lowly and despised? Because he was a shepherd. He began his career as a shepherd, and the shepherd was not the most choshev parnasa to have. That's the kettle spoiled. You sound like Louis? The kettle spoiled.
Yeah, please, yeah, thank you.
Can I carry on?
Yes.
So David says of himself that he is the lowly shepherd, and he is the Zulus, he's the despised person, and then suddenly he was rocketed to stardom because he was appointed as the Melech. Yes. So now he's Karum, he's exalted. And he says that the Bnei Odom, the people all around, and in particular the Rishoyim, cannot cope with the idea that here this despised shepherd boy has suddenly become the great Melech. And he says, and to that extent, he is insulted or he's despised by people because they can't cope with the fact that
they're jealous.
Exactly, yeah, they're jealous. That's right. Yeah. And Rashi quotes another pasuk which speaks along the same vein, and that's in Tehillim chapter Kuf Yud Ches, pasuk Kaf Beis, it's pasuk familiar to us through Hallel, Even Masu Habonim, the stone that was despised by the builders. And what happened to it? Hoysar Rish Pinot. It became the main cornerstone of the building. And David saying that about himself. He says, I am that despised stone. I was a shepherd boy. And now I've suddenly become exalted and become the top position in Klal Yisrael. I'm the Melech. And the Rishoyim all around me cannot cope with the idea that I've from such lowliness, I've arrived at such Gedulah. pot. Then Rashi brings another pshat, that this Karum Zulus is a reference to Klal Yisrael after at the times of Mashiach. We are the most despised nation on earth. That's Zulus, despised. And then Karum, we become exalted at the times of Mashiach. We're exalted to that great idea. To a great Madrigal, but only after the times of Mashiach are we lifted from Zulus into Kurum, from a great lowliness to a great height. That's how.
Now we're despised.
Yeah, right now we're despised, but at the time of Mashiach we'll be greatly exalted. Then we're actually going to third pshat in the name of Menachem. That's lexicographer, you know, the one who wrote like a dictionary and so on. One of the Rishonim, and he says that the word Kurum means kiraim, like a buffalo. Right, Ra'im is the word for buffalo. That we say the bracha of Yosef in Deserves the Bracha.
Yes,
the Karni Ra'im kind of. Yes, the reason apparently inside of a buffalo or some kind of wild ox, and the idea is it's got very exalted horns. That's why the animal is called Ra'im. Rom is on high. It's not like a bull. Rashi in Deserves the Bracha.
See pictures of it. I know.
Really?
Yeah. Or two horns. There's two horns.
Two horns, but they're large.
It's a
mythological creature. One pshat is a buffalo. One pshat is a ra'im is a buffalo.
Yeah.
Ra'im
is a
mythological
creature at the time of the
Latin. Maybe one pshat is that. But according to many pshatim, it's an animal with large horns.
Yes, the buffalo. It was a mythological.
Mythological.
For a certain period, at the time of the building of the base of Mikdash.
Yeah.
In the wilderness, they need the skins.
Wait a minute. That sounds like the Tachash. The Tachash was used. The Aratachash, the skin of the unicorn. I think that sounds like not the Tachash.
The rain.
Yes. Oh, it could be. Yeah. All right. I haven't seen that chat. So for these. This is right, I balance it on here.
Yeah.
Yes, so we'll help ourselves first. So that is one, at any rate, many translate it as a buffalo. Now, what's the idea? So Rashi explains that the buffalo, which is this Kurum, like the Ra'im, like the buffalo, and Zulus, which is an expression of gluttony, like we say in the Ben Sero Merer, Zolel Vesove, right? Zolel is the same idea as Zulus, is this buffalo, which is a gluttonous animal, eats a lot, and so too the Rishoyim are like that. The Rishoyim are waiting to trap the Tzadikim, like a buffalo waiting with gluttonous zeal to trap its prey. Or to trap some food, or to get some food. In other words, it just won't give up. So that's Rashi's third shot in this pasuk. Karum is kiraim, like the rain, like the buffalo, and Zulus is Zolel, Livnei Odom, trying to trap people, like the buffalo, to try and get its food. Yeah. That's Rashi's third shot. Now, there's an amazing piece of Targum on this pasuk, and I could not make head or tail of this Targum until I found a pirush on the Targum in the Yalkut Miamnois. Let me give you the Targum first. Chazar Rashiyayo Mahalchim. The Rishoyim walk round and round. That's Soviv Rishoyim Yisalochim. Ka'aluka. Now, aluka is a leech. Like a leech. Demotzatsa, divnei nosha, which sucks the blood from people. So what I can understand is, how does the Targum get this idea of a leech, an aluka?
Like an animal.
A leech is a small animal that used to be used for bloodletting, because it eats blood.
Doctors used to,
not now.
They
still do it?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, really. I hope you're not talking about them. Really?
Where?
Oh, okay. So the Targum translates Karum as Ka'aluka, like a leech. I couldn't understand. Where does the Targum get it from? How does this word Karum point to an beach? It can point to a buffalo, to a rain. But how does it come to the word, how does it come to beach? Like that, yeah? I don't do it like this. How does it come to the word aluka, a leech, from the word karum? So the answer on this explains that the word karum is like karima. Now the word rima, we understand, rima is a worm.
Rima
Vesalea, exactly. So karum is karima, like a leech. And in fact, the Mossad Rav Kook Pirush on Tehillim says that this word rima is the feminine form of rim. And this animal, type of worm, is called a rim, and the feminine is called a rima. It's interesting, there are some animals who are always referred to by the female version, like a yonah is a dove, where the male of the species is actually called yon, and the female is yonah. But we always refer to doves using the feminine version, yonah. Why that is, I don't know. Likewise, this worm is always referred, or worm or leech, is called a rima, and the masculine form would be rim. At any rate, that's how the Targum knows it. Karum is karima, like a leech. Kaluka, like a leech. So the Rosha is out to get the tzaddik, like a leech will suck blood from a human being. So to the Rosha will suck strength and so on from human beings.
You say things like different, like reform Judaism, or liberal Judaism. Could you call these things they're trying to get tzaddik in? I don't know, maybe it's going too far.
Who knows? I've no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't pass time to.
Because they try to get people to join them, you know, to think.
Yeah. I don't know. I know, I can't pass on these things. Yeah. Okay. Right, the Radak learns slightly differently on this last expression, Karum Zulus Livnei Odom, says the Radak, it Karum. Well, he takes it with the first part of the pasuk. Sofik v'shem is halacha, and the Rishonim walk all around Karum. When they are exalted, when the Rasha is exalted, then that is Zulus Livnei Adam, then that's despicable for mankind. Yeah? When the Rasha, who should be down, but downtrodden, ends up being Karum, ends up being an exalted person, then that is Zulus Livnei Adam, then that is bad news for everyone else. Now, there's a medrash, Shechetov, on this pasuk, where with an interesting machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. Let's first learn Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda learns Soviv Lirish, he says Soviv Lirish, he understands the words Soviv Rishoyim is halachim, means that Soviv Lirishoyim, it means around the Rishoyim Yis halachim, they go. Who is they? Says Rabbi Yehuda, it's tzadikim. So there's a missing word from the pasuk. Soviv Rishoyim is halachun, around the Rishoyim, comma, yis halachun tzadikim walk. Tzadikim walk around the Rishoyim. What does this mean? So the Rabbi Yehuda explains in the Medrash Shetotot that the Rishoyim walk around, they come out of the Rishoyim, the tzadikim walk around the Rishoyim. He says the tzadikim come out of Gan Eden and see the Rishoyim in Gehenim. And they say to themselves, oh, Baruch Hashem, wonderful for us. We're in Gan Eden, the Rishayim are in Gehenim, and how wonderful it is that we've succeeded, and look what we might have been, we could have ended up like these Rishayim, whereas we've succeeded and we're in Gan Eden. And the tzaddikim give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that, and they thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all the tzaris that they suffered in Olam Hazeh, which therefore gives them Gan Eden in Olam Haba. Gives them a wonderful life. So that's how Rabbi Yehuda learns this. And he says that the word Karum is another reference to the good people in Klal Yisrael. Why? Because it's spelt unusually. It would normally be spelt with a letter Vav. Wouldn't it? Karum would normally be spelt with a letter Vav. And yet here it's just spelled Kaf Resh Mem. Says Rabbi Huda in the Medrash HaKetuv, it's a reference to the word Kerem, a vineyard. Why? Because in Yeshaya, chapter Hey, Posuk Zayin, we have a reference to Klal Yisrael as a Kerem. Ki Kerem Hashem Tzavakos Beis Yisrael. Because the vineyard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Klal Yisrael. So the vineyard, this word Karum points to the word Kerem, a vineyard, that Klal Yisrael are compared to the vineyard. That is how that's how Rabbi Yehuda lands. Now Rabbi Nechemia in the Medrash Shochatov gets very upset about this, and Rabbi Nechemia turns to Rabbi Yehuda and he says quite a strong expression, and he says, "Amale Rabbi Nechemia, Yehuda, ad mosai ata ukim alenu es hamikra. How long are you going to persist in distorting the pasuk? Why? Simple, because there's." So that is explained by the Minchas Shai. What does Rav Nechemia mean? He says because the Neginus in the Pasuk link the word Rashoim to the word Yishalochun. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's Saviv Rashoim, comma, around the Rashoim, Yishalochun Tzadikim walk. Says Rav Nechemia to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not right. The Neginus and the Pasuk link the word Rashoim to the word Yishalochun. And so you can't say that there's a pause between the word Rashoim and the word Yishalochun. This is how the Minchas Shai explains the Pasuk. Minchas Shai usually explains the Neginus and so on.
When the Neginus is?
Oh gosh, I don't know. No, I just don't know.
It's very important.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Yeah.
But then, of course, the Neginus should, in order to be a situation like that, and of course the Neginus should have been instituted at the same time as this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the Neginus are so much part of Tehillim that they were probably written by David himself. Along with the words. I mean, the Tehillim is set to music. Yeah, we Levim, right? The Tehillim is set to music. And and I'm pretty sure the Neginus were given by, written with the Pasuk by David. So that makes it a key issue, yeah? So this is why Rav Nechemia? Yes, Rav Nechemia is very upset with Rav Nachman, with Rabbi Yehuda on this Pasuk. And he says, you're distorting the Pasuk. And says Rav Nechemia, what does the pasuk mean? It's Saviv Rashoim Yishalochun. It's the Rashoim walking. They Rashoim are the ones doing the walking, and they are walking around the tzaddikim. And it's the Rashoim who is saying, "What a shame for us that Karum, that which is exalted, i.e., mitzvahs, was Zulus Livnei Adam. We treated the mitzvahs with this." Spain, yeah, we despise the mitzvahs. They should be kurum. The mitzvahs were really exalted, but really, as far as we were concerned, they were zulus. And it's the Rishoyim walking around the tzaddikim, and it's the Rishoyim witnessing the tzaddikim in Gan Eden, and the Rishoyim is saying to themselves, you know, hey, look what we missed out on. Yeah, we really missed out here. We despised the mitzvahs, which should have been kurum, should have been on high and exalted, and yet we treated them as zulus. We despised them.
Sorry, but they're upset.
Very sorry. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
Tzaddikim going around there.
Go,
you see the other way
around. Oh, so Rabbi Yehuda learns it's the tzaddikim walking around the Rishoyim and commenting on the tzaddikim, and Rabbi Nechemia says it's no, it's the Rishoyim walking around the tzaddikim. Now the Alkem Amos brings a very sweet shot in the name of the pre Moshe. I don't know what that sefer is. The Alkem Amos says Soviv Rishoyim Yishalochun means Rishoyim spend their whole lives walking around in circles. Why? And he says because they work in order to have parnosa, in order to eat, but then they eat in order to have the kirch to carry on working. So that's one big vicious circle. They work to eat, and they will eat to work. So what are they really achieving with their lives? And the answer is not a lot. They're going around in circles. Whereas we work in order to have kirch, not kirch in order to carry on working, but kirch to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're achieving that. We've got that. That's the facet to our lives which makes our lives worthwhile. We work in order to have a pan ourselves so that we can survive, so that we can eat, so that we have koach, not to work again, but to serve a kushbuchu. Whereas it's something we're showing saloch, and we're showing just going round and round in circles, not really achieving very much. Yeah, good. Now we come to the major part of the shiur. And the major part of the shiur is a Gemara in Brachos, that's Rav Ahmed Beis. And let's see if we can do it. The Gemara in Brachos analyzes this pasuk, and the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Huna, Daf Vav Amud Beis in Brachos. Amar Rav Huna, Kol Amispalel Achorei Beis HaKnesses. Anyone who davens behind the shul, Nikra Rosha, is called a Rosha. Why? You should be in shul, not behind the shul. And he brings the pasuk. Shneema Soviv Rishayim Yisalochun Al Pasuk. Sofer Rishon Yisalochen. The Rishonim walk around. In other words, the Rishonim are not in the shul. They're not in shul. They are behind. Achori Beis HaKnesset. They're behind the shul. Yeah? That's Rav Huna's halacha. And then Abaya qualifies the halacha. Amar Abaya, Lo Amoron, we don't say that, Lo Amoron Ella, we only say this to Lemahata Ape Lebekinishta, if the Rosha is behind the shul and does not turn his face to the shul. He might be behind the shul, but if he's facing the shul, it's okay. Avo Mahada Ape Lebekinishta, but if he turns his face to the shul, less Lombo, then there's no problem with it. So, halacha from Rav Huna, a Rosha is the person who davens behind, the person who davens behind the shul is a Rosha. Qualified by Abaya, he's only a Rosha if he doesn't face the shul. But if he faces the shul, then he's okay, he's not a Rosha at all. Then the Gemara brings a story.
He doesn't daven
in the shul. He davens based on Knesset, behind the shul. He's not joining in with the shul. And we'll see what the definition is. We'll see what the definition is of Achori Beis HaKnesset. We'll see.
Then like he'll daven to Hashem. I'm not going to go as far as going into shul.
It's exactly
that far. I'm not going.
That's it. He's excluding himself from the shul, but we'll see where he is. It's not so simple where this Rosha really is davening. Let's see. Then the Gemara brings a story. Hahu Gavra, there was a man to come matzleh achari bekenishta who davened behind the shul, and we'll see where he was. V'lema had a apel bekenishta, and he did not turn his face towards the shul. Chonaf Eliyahu walked past Chaziyeh, and he saw him. Id mele kataya. And Eliyahu Hanavi made himself appear like an Arab. Omale, he said to him, this is Eliyahu talking to this man, Kudu bar kaimas kame moroch, you stand before your master as though you have two masters. Because everyone else is in shul davening one way, and you're out of shul, and you're davening the other way. So it's as though there are two rishuyos, two masters of the world. And so Eliyahu challenged this man. Sholach safsara, he drew his sword, the katle, and he killed him. Yeah. That's the story. Eliyahu killed this man. There is a different Gersa in the Gemara brought by the Rif that it wasn't really Eliyahu Hanavi at all, but it really was an Arab. Yeah, that's how the Rif learns it really was an Arab. Not Eliyahu Hanavi, but it really was an Arab who seems to challenge us. You know, what kind of Jew are you? You know, you're praying the wrong way. Everyone's praying one way, you're praying the other way, and he killed him for that. Now, how does this work? What is it all about? What's this idea of davening Achorei Beis HaKnesset, davening behind the shul? Big machlokes. Let's start learning by, according to Rashi, as understood by Tosfos. Now, the Tosfos is printed on in Brachas Daf Vav Amud Aleph, and is also in Avodah Zorah Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis. It's actually quite hard to understand how Tosfos interpreted the Rashi. Tosfos's interpretation of Rashi is as follows. This is how he learns Rashi learns. We're talking about the shul. The Beis HaKnesset, the front of the Beis HaKnesset is in the west. Because we're talking about a shul in Bovel. Now Bovel is to the east of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore the shuls in Bovel faced west in order to face Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And indeed that's how they're made, the shuls in Bovel are designed along the same lines as the shuls in along the same line as the Beis HaMikdash itself, where the Kodesh HaKadoshim was at the western extremity of the shul of the Beis HaMikdash, right? So the shul is facing towards the west, and the entrance to the shul is in the east, at the back of the shul, what we would call the back of the shul. So Rashi therefore learns that Achori Beis HaKnesset means standing outside shul at the western end of the shul, which is at the Aron HaKodesh end, but outside shul and facing west. Okay? So he's davening in the right direction, so to speak. He's facing towards Eretz Yisrael, but he's got his back to the shul, and he's got his back to the Aron HaKodesh, so to speak. He goes back to the Aron HaKodesh. That is called Achorov. That's davening Achorei Beis HaKnesset, behind the shul. He's at the back end of the shul, with his back to the Aron HaKodesh, and he's facing west. Okay? says Rashi, this is Achri Beis HaKnesset. This is terrible. Why? Because he's got his back to the Aron HaKodesh. He's got his back to the Tzibur, and he's got his back to the Aron HaKodesh. If he, and along comes a buyer, and he says, well, if he would just turn around, if he turns his face towards the shul, then that's okay. Because he might, his body might be facing one way, but if he's facing the Aron HaKodesh, then that's okay. He's showing allegiance to the Aron HaKodesh, and that's okay. That is how Rashi learns. Tosfos is very upset about that. And Tosfos says, well, that's no good, because if you're saying, we'll think on to Tosfos. How does Rashi come to understand Achore to mean the western end? Says the Vilna Gaon, and I haven't seen this inside, I saw it quoted, says the Vilna Gaon, I don't know where the Vilna Gaon is, it's possibly the Vilna Gaon on Shulchan Aruch, because this is a halacha brought in Ur Chaim, Simon Tzadi, halacha Vot. So says the Vilna Gaon, how does Rashi come to understand that the western end of the shul is called Achore, the back of the shul? Why? Because east, the opposite of west, east is often called Kedem. Well, Kedem means front, because the sun rises in the east, comes up in the east, the beginning of the day, Kedem, the start of the day, is in the Mizrach, is in the east. Right? That's why east, Mizrach, is also called Kedem, because it's first, the sun gets there first. Well, the opposite of Kedem, front, is Ocher, back. Therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, that's why Rashi learns the Achuri Beis HaKnesset, the back of the shul, is the western end of the shul, because west is Ocher, is opposite to Kedem. Right? Interesting. So east is Kedem, and Ocher is the opposite of Kedem, and the opposite of east is west. So that's Ocher is after. Exactly. Well, that'd be Acher, that's Acher. It's Achar, after, is in other words, which is the opposite of Kedem. Achar, afterwards, is the opposite of Kedem, before. And the sun sets in the west, which is Acher, which is afterwards, at the end of the day. That's right. It's behind you. That's right. It's always beyond you. The arrows are beyond. Aha, that's right. Okay. Yeah. So that's how Rashi learns. Now Tosfos asks the Kasha. Tosfos says on this that according to Rashi, if he's standing outside the shul and he's facing west, then it's okay as long as he turns his face round towards the Aron HaKodesh. Tosfos says, well, that's no good at all. How can that be okay? If he turns his face towards the Aron HaKodesh, then in effect he's davening facing east. Everyone is davening facing west, and this man is turning around towards the east. So Tosfos, how can Abaya say that that would be alright? Abaya says, if he turns his face to the Beit HaMishkan, towards the shul, then it's okay. So Tosfos says, well, how can that be okay? He's facing the opposite direction. Everyone is davening facing west, and he's davening with his face towards the east. Well, that's even worse. That's really like davening as though there are two gods, one in the west and one in the east. How can that be? So Tosfos, oh, you've shot. So Tosfos, what's it mean? He says, he agrees with Rashi that we're talking where the shul is facing west. The front of the shul, or the Aron HaKodesh end of the shul, is in the west, and the doors to the shul are at the back, in the east. So Tosfos, it means the Mispalel Achorei Beis HaKnesset is the person who stands outside shul in the east. So he's outside the front doors of the shul. Okay, he's outside. That's called the back of the shul. That's Achorei Beis HaKnesset. He's outside the doors of the shul, and he's facing towards the east. That means the whole Tzibur is facing towards the west, and he is outside at the eastern end of the shul with his back to the shul, i.e., he's facing the east. That, says Tosfos, is a mispalel achorei beis haknesses. I mean, towards the east. He's facing towards the east.
Different direction he's facing.
Different direction, exactly. Yes, facing different direction. That's right. Yeah. And the Vilna Gaon has got a bit of a problem with this, Tosfos. Says the Vilna Gaon, if that's what he's doing, if the problem is that he's facing to the east, well then, why do we need to say that he's outside shul? according to the Pshat Tosfos, that he's at the eastern end of the shul, at the doors of the shul, with his back to the shul, and he's facing east. Well, why do you need to say that he's outside? Even if he would be in the shul, let's say standing at the back of the shul, at the eastern end of the shul, facing towards the east, facing the back of the shul, that's just as bad, isn't it? So the Vilna Gaon, that's the Vilna Gaon's kashya against Tosfos, and it's also brought in the Mashal. You know, well, what
he may is where is he facing?
He could even be in. That's right. Yeah. The problem is that he's facing east. Everyone's facing west, and this man's facing east. But he could even be in the shul facing
the
east,
direction.
Facing the wrong direction. That's how that's the kashya of the Vilna Gaon. Rabbeinu Yonah has got a third shot. Rabbeinu Yonah says no. Really, the shul is facing towards the east. Like our European shuls, where we are west of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore to face Eretz Yisrael, we face towards the east. And he says as follows, the Heichal, as he calls it, the Heichal is in the eastern end, and the Aron HaKodesh is in the eastern end, with the doors at the western end. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, what does Achorei Beis HaKnesses mean? It means he's outside, at the western end, which we would call the door end of the shul, and he's facing to the west. That means, again, he's facing away from the shul. And says Rabbeinu Yonah, why is this man a Rosha? Because he's doing three things wrong. Number one is, everyone is inside the shul, and he's outside the shul. Second thing wrong is that everyone is facing east, and he's facing west. And the third thing that he's doing wrong is that he's turned his back on the shul. He's doing three things wrong. And he says that...
So his back is towards the shul.
His back is towards the shul. His back is towards... He's facing the Aron HaKodesh. That's one thing. So it's an insult to the shul. Yeah. And the second thing that he's doing wrong is that everyone is facing east and he's facing west. And the third thing he's doing wrong is he's outside and everyone else is inside. Yeah. And if he would... And he says that if he would be facing west, but inside the shul... i.e. if he would be facing the wrong direction, everyone's dumbing towards the east and he's dumbing towards the west, but he's inside the shul, says Rabbeinu Yonah, he's doing wrong, but it wouldn't, that because he's in the shul, we would not label him a Rasha. Soviv Rishoyim Yisalochim. Yeah, we wouldn't label him a Rasha if he would be inside. So if he's facing the wrong direction...
He's in front of everybody else, isn't he? If he's actually in the shul...
Yeah.
He's doing it in front of everybody
else.
It's more...
You're saying that's worse? Yeah, but, well, Rabbeinu Yonah takes an opposite view. He says, he's inside. At least he's inside. The man who's outside is doing three things wrong. He's outside, and he's facing the wrong direction, and he's turning his back on the shul. Whereas if he'd be turning his back on the Aron HaKodesh, but inside the shul, he's inside. He's wrong, he's not behaving correctly, but at least he's inside the shul. That is how Rabbeinu Yonah learns. And then he would say, and if he would be outside the shul, at the eastern extremity, which is the Aron HaKodesh end, learning as Rabbeinu Yonah learns, with his back to the eastern wall, in other words, he's facing east, again, it's wrong, because he's got his back on the Aron HaKodesh, because he's standing at the eastern end outside, and he's outside, but again, we wouldn't say he's a Rosha. He's doing wrong, because then he's doing two things wrong, because he's facing the right direction, exactly. I've no idea. I vaguely remember. I once asked Rabbi Cooper about it. I vaguely remember. Yeah. Oh no, hang on. I can answer you. Hang on. I'll answer you with the following. There is a tshuva in a sefer called Yad Eliyahu. Shailus Tshuva is Yad Eliyahu Simon Zion. I've just seen it quoted, where he says that this halacha applies only when the tzibur are davening amida, and the individual who's facing the wrong way is also davening amida. So there's the answer, right? Because for amida, everybody faces the right direction. They're turn around, they face the right direction. Correct. Yes? So that will answer it. So answer according to the Yad Eliyahu, but it's subject to machlokas. There's a sefer called Ma'amar Mordechai who disputes this. I've only seen it quoted. He says that it applies even at a time when people are not davening amida. So there we are. So according to the Ma'amar Mordechai, they've got a kasha about the Rabbonim who sit at the front facing the opposite direction.
Is he conversing when the Aron HaKodesh is taken out? Then
That's exactly where I could have seen it. Yeah. Yeah. Correct. Okay.
So they ask the sign in such a place they're not actually turning to the Turkish army because they're like in an enclave.
Oh. That's right. When people turn around, they've been checked with someone and they turn their backs on
the army.
No, the Arvonians,
they don't actually turn their back.
No,
which direction do they govern in Australia when they're midway between the box between?
Yeah, well, wherever they are, they need to face towards SSL.
Yeah, okay, but if you're in Australia, it's probably equidistant.
Northwest. Northwest.
Is that right?
Or any particular place, which is equidistant.
If you're equidistant, which way would you go? No idea.
The compass points. You always try to identify the compass points. Do northwest in Australia.
Or cousin in Australia.
Yeah.
I just finish off because we've got to close very soon.
Just to tell you that in Shulchan Aruch, in Erechayim, Simon Tzadi says Zayin, he brings all these pshatim, the machlokes is which direction it says, and he says really a person should avoid all these places. You should daven in the shul, facing the right direction, and then you're okay. Just continuing with the Gemara there in Brachas Daf Vav on the base, the Gemara continues to explain our pasuk. Says the Gemara, Amru le hazumer abonon le raf bivi bar abaya. One particular Amura said to Rabbi, the son of Abaya, for Amri Law, some people say, no, it wasn't that person, but it was rather Rabbi, the Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, because actually Rabbi is speaking to Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, and he said, what's the pshat in our pasuk? My Karum Zulus Liv Neodom, what's the pshat in these words, Karum Zulus Liv Neodom, this combination of Karum, which is something exalted, and the word Zulus, which is something under. It's trodden underfoot or something abused, something lowly. Amalei, so he answered, what's the pshat in the pasuk? Eile dvarim ha'undim v'rima shel olam. This is something which stands at the very lofty part of the world, something extremely high, but v'nei adam azalzalim b'hem, but people, mankind, abuse it. There's something which is extremely lofty, that's Kurum, but it is simultaneously abused and debased, and that's the word Zulus. So, what is this thing? So, it says Rashi, it's a reference to Tefillah. If you go in Tefillah, says Rashi, for example, it's a reference to Tefillah, Sha'ola Lamala, which goes up, about, goes up on high. So that's the pshat, it's Karum, it's something which is extremely lofty and important, which is Tefillah, but at the same time, people don't really daven as they should, and they abuse Tefillah. Then the Gemara continues. Rav Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, the Amri Chavayu, both Rav Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar both say the following. They say, Kimon shenitzach adam labriyos, once a person becomes needed by, once a person relies upon society, he becomes he's a needy case financially, he becomes a tzedakah case and he needs people to support him. What happens? Panov mishtanis kikrum. His face will change like a krum. The Gemara doesn't yet define what that is. Once a person is relies on public funds, his face changes like a krum. Shenema. Apozuk. Krum zalus livnei odom. Once a person is relies on Bnei Odom, then he is Kurum Zulus. He's lowly and he becomes like a Kurum. My Kurum, says the Gemara, what is this Kurum? Ki also Rav Dimi, Omar, when Rav Dimi came, and that's a reference when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he travelled backwards and forwards carrying messages from one place to the other. So when Rav Dimi came to Bavel, Omar, he said, you know what it is, it's Oth Echod Yish B'Krachei Ayom. There's a particular bird that lives on some islands overseas, or Shemel Kurum, and the name of this bird is a Kurum, The chilin shechama zeracha sort when the sun shines on that bird, then the bird changes color into all many different types of colors. So a person who relies on people for financial support becomes like this bird, and their face can change into many different colors. The Gemara continues, Ravami Ravasi Dami Shavaihu, both Ravami and Ravasi say, Ki'ilu Midam Bishnei Dinim. Such a person who is poverty stricken and relies on public funds, it's as though he's judged with two harsh judgments. And what are the two judgments? It's Eish Umayim. He's judged with fire and he's also judged with water. That's the Gemara. Now, I saw this sefer, and I didn't jot down the name of the sefer, it's a very modern sefer on Agadata, which Rabbi Emerson Royd showed me in school in Pavis House, and it's a very modern sefer. I wish I would have written down the name of it. And on that sefer, on the Agadati, he just points out one very small thing, and he says that this bird, which where when the sun shines on the bird changes into all different colours. This bird is known as the Kurum, and he points out that the word Kurum surely is the source of the modern word Chrome, C-H-R-O-M-E, Chrome, which is probably a Latin word, or maybe it's Greek, and it means colour, like monochrome is one colour, or photochromatic lenses, which are lenses that change colour in the sunlight and so on. So chrome is colour, chroma. He brings the word chroma, and that's his word chrome, because the bird changes into all different colours. So, turn the tape over. On this Gemara, what's pshat in this Gemara? The person who relies on public money, and why does the face change color, and why is he nidan keish shemayim? Says the Mashal, it's a reference to the halacha that if a person is owed money, he has no business. The malveh should not go to the place of the loveh. That is, if the malveh knows that the loveh has no money to pay him back, the loveh nebuch has borrowed money but he hasn't got the funds to repay the loan, then the malveh should try his best to steer clear of the loveh. Why? Because if he goes close to the loveh, then he goes regularly, he'll embarrass the loveh. And that's the idea. He says, here we have the malveh who's going, he's the rosha, sovri of roshayim yis halochun, this rosha, he's going around, he's going around in the close vicinity of the loveh, and Nebuch the loveh does not have the funds to pay back, and therefore without the malveh embarrasses the loveh. And he says that's why the Gemara finishes off that he's nidan ke'ish shemayim, ve'ish shemayim, he's judged with fire and water. He says the fire is a colour red and the water is a colour white, no colour at all. And he says that's the reference to where the Gemara speaks about being malbim pnei chaver barabim. If you embarrass someone, it's ozil sunka, the redness within the face. First the person blushes and then the blood drains away, but osi chivra, and then the face turns white with embarrassment and with shame. And that's this idea of eish shemayim. He's nidan ke'eish shemayim. He's judged with the fire and water, but first he blushes, which is the colour of the fire, and then the face turns white, and that's the mayim. And then the Mashal also points out, yeah, that this is the reference, yeah, that's right, the reference of the Rosha who goes into the vicinity of the Malveh, who's the Rosha who goes close by to the Loveh, and Nebuch really hasn't got the funds to pay back. The Eitz Yosef brought in the Ein Yaakov, the Pirush Eitz Yosef says, what was this idea of the face of this poor person changing into all different colours? Why all different colours? It's because people, the different colours reflect the different quantities of tzedakah that the person receives. If some people might pay him handsomely, give him a generous donation, others will give him a less of a generous donation, and all the different colours of the face are represented by the different levels of donation the person will receive. in the Chiddushim Geunim, printed at the side of the Ein Yaakov, he brings a nice pshat. He says this idea of the person Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, the Amri Chavayu, given she nitzrach odom nabiyus. When a person, we understand it means an oni who needs society. She nitzrach odom nabiyus. But the Chiddushim Geunim says it doesn't say given she tzorich odom nabiyus, when a person needs other people. It's given she nitzrach in the nifal, which literally means when the person is needed by others. Once a person is needed, and he says, who is the person who is needed by society? He says, he's the person who serves the kehila at large. He's a rav of the kehila, or spiritual leader of the kehila, and he is needed by his kehila. That's nitzach odom abiyas. He's needed by society. And what about this person? Ponov mishtanis kikrum. He has to have this face that can change all different colours. He needs to be a multi-talented person, a person who can react differently to the different members of his kehila. Some people, he says, will need a very stern Musa Joshua. Other people need to be dealt with simcha. Some people need to be dealt with strictly. Some people need to be dealt with gently. And he says the rav of the community needs to be a person who he is the person who is nitzach odom labias. He's needed by society, and such a person needs to be multi-talented and be able to deal with everybody differently. And that's part of mishtanas kikrumi. His face needs to be able to change into all different shapes and all different colours in order to deal with all different types of people. The Chiddushim Geunim goes on to say another very beautiful pshat. He says that the Gemara here is very explicit about this kurum, this bird. What about it? It's the oath echod yesh v'krachei ayom ha-shomer kurum, this bird overseas, the chivin shechamo zerach ha-salot mishapech v'kama gavonim. When does the bird's face change colour? Only when the sun shines upon it. So the Chiddushim Geunim brings in the name of the Tzlach, the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, chapter Kafis Pasuk Aleph, where the Pasuk speaks there about the Ganov who breaks into a property. In Bamachteris Yimatziah Ganov, if the Ganov is found having dug his way in or broken into a property, v'hukah, and he is smitten by the balabais, v'omeis, and he dies, im l'domim, Rashi explains, im l'domim means that this ganav, it's as though the ganav has no blood, meaning we're not going to hold the balabais responsible for the death of the ganav. Why ever not? So Rashi explains, because this ganav has broken into the property, clearly he's fully prepared to kill, to murder the balabais in order to make good his escape, and therefore the life of the balabais is threatened, and therefore the balabais is a nirudof, he's being chased by the ganav is fully prepared to kill him, and therefore the balabais has the full halachic rights to kill the ganav. In the domim, it's as though the ganav has no blood. In other words, we're not bothered about the fact that the balabais has killed the ganav. The balabais merely killed the ganav in self-defense. Now, the next pasuk is very interesting and is relevant to our Gemara. Im zorcha hashemesh olav, literally means if the sun shines for him, domim lo, then yes, there is blood to him. The ganav is considered as though he has blood. So Rashi explains, what's this idea of the sun shines? It means, if we, like when the sun shines upon the world, the sun brings peace, shalom, to the world. So likewise, it's a moshav, likewise, if the balabais realizes that the ganav comes with intentions of theft, but no more. The ganav would not descend to the depths or the depravities of murder, he would not stoop to kill the balabais for whatever reason. Rashi gives an example, supposing the ganav is the father of the balabais, so he's a really bad man, he's a ganav and he's stealing from his own son, but however bad he is as a ganav, he's prepared to steal from his own son, there's no way he would be prepared to kill his own son. He wouldn't be prepared to kill the balabais even in order to make good his escape as a ganav. Therefore, the balabais, seeing the ganav as his own father, it's zorcha Hashem Shalom. The sun shines to him. It's as though that the ganav is bringing peace. Like the sun brings peace to the world, likewise the ganav in with respect to murder, is a man of peace. He has no intentions of murdering the Balabais. Therefore, Domim lo, it is as though the Ganav does indeed have blood, and therefore the Balabais is not allowed to kill the Ganav. And if the Balabais were to kill the Ganav, then the Balabais would be answerable in a beis din to the accusation of murder of the Ganav. Domim lo, it's as though he does have blood. That is how Rashi learns the pasuk. However, the Targum Unklus learns the pasuk differently. Imzarcha Hashem Esholav, and this is relevant to Agmar. Says the Targum Unklus, Im Einor de Sahadaya Nefolas Alohi, if the eyes of witnesses have fallen upon him, that is upon the Ganav. In other words, the Ganav has been spotted. The Ganav has been seen by witnesses, and those witnesses go to the Balabais, and they warn the Balabais, you know, you're being burgled at the moment. And the Ganav is well aware that he's being watched by two Edim. Now, there's no way that while this Ganav is being watched by Edim, there's no way that he would murder the Balabais. Therefore, if the Balabais ends up murdering the Ganav, then the Balabais is answerable to an accusation of murder. Demole, as the Targum puts it, Demole is Domim Lo. It's as though the Ganav does have blood, and it's, in other words, it's as though and therefore the Balabais really is answerable to the accusation of murder. So the way the Targum learns the pasuk is that Imzarcha Hashem Eshalov, if the sun shines upon him, says the Targum, what does it mean? It means that the Ganav has been spotted by Edim, and the Ganav knows that he's being watched by Edim. So now we know for sure that we can sort of read the mind of the Ganav, that there's no way he would murder the Balabais. Why won't he murder the Balabais? Because he's being watched by Edim. So if the Ganav won't murder the Balabais, then the life of the Balabais is not being threatened, and therefore the Balabais has no right to kill the Ganav. So, taking this pasuk, Yuzarcha Hashem Shalom, which is being understood by the Targum as being a reference to the Edim witnessing the Ganav, now the Tzlach, quoted in the Chiddush HaGaonim, learns a new pshat in our Gemara. Our Gemara says that we're talking about a bird which is called the Krum. Rav Kiyasa, Rav Dimi explains, Othechad Yesh V'Krachayom, there's a bird overseas, a Shemo Krum. It's called the Krum, V'chimu Shacham Azarach Asalav, and when the sun shines upon that bird, Misapech L'Kam Gavonim, then the face of the bird will change into all different colours. And we saw how this is referenced to the Oni who receives Tzedakah, and the Marashah learns it's a reference to the Malveh who has lent this Oni money, and he's embarrassing the Loveh by being in the vicinity of the Loveh. Well, says the Chiddush HaGaonim, we can learn even further. We're talking here about a person who gives tzedakah to the Oni, but does so in public. And that's the pshat, Gimel Shechama Zerach HaSalav, the sun shines upon it, meaning, learning like the Targum learns in our pasuk, that there are Edim around, and the Edim can see. When the Oni receives tzedakah money, but receives that tzedakah money in front of other people, he's embarrassed. His face changes colour. He's terribly embarrassed by having to receive tzedakah money in public. Edim can see him, and therefore he's embarrassed by that. That's how the Chiddush HaGaonim learns in the name of the Tzlach, learns our Gemara, that Kimin Shechama Zerach HaSalav means like the pasuk about Imzorcha Hashem Esholav, meaning that there are witnesses in our Gemara, witnesses who see the Oni receiving tzedakah money. One should give tzedakah in private, so that the person who's giving doesn't even know the identity of the recipient, and the recipient doesn't know the identity of the donor, and that reduces embarrassment all round. Here we're talking upon of mishtanis. When will the face of the Oni change colour with embarrassment? When the sun shines upon him like the sun shining on the birds. In other words, that there are witnesses who see this Oni receiving tzedakah money, and that is what will cause the face of the Oni to change in embarrassment.